alternatives to chemical sanitation of grain and some organism resistance. Now, I think most of the active grain members know Malcolm. What you maybe did not know is that he's got a degree in electronics engineering, and after doing that, he got involved in the grain and the food and grain and feed industry, and he was originally with Lab World, but then he bought out that company in 2012 and established AE Solutions, where he's now managing director. So he's currently an independent supplier and service provider of instrumentation and other services for the grain, milling, feed, and food and dairy industry all over sub-Saharan Africa. So welcome, welcome to the podium. Thank you.
Can you guys hear me? And that was Bruce's introduction. Often when I'm in front of you guys, I'm normally presenting something that I want to sell to you. In this case, it's not like that. Today, I'm going to be trying to educate some people where I need to educate myself as well in something which is fairly new, at least to South Africa. Spending some time in the USA, I found this radio frequency pasteurization. Let me go back 2 steps. We're involved with determining water activity in foodstuff. Water activity, you think shelf life, you have water activity. And how do you reduce water activity? You either use a humectant or you have to pasteurize in a specific way to get rid of those specific organisms and reduce the water activity so they don't grow anymore. And that led us into this radio frequency pasteurization, which I found really interesting. And even though it's a very new product to us as well as a new technology to you guys, I think there's a lot of interest in this. And today I'd just like to bring this across to you. So what I want to tell you is what radio pasteurization is. I'd also like to tell you how it works. I'd like to tell you about the benefits of radio pasteurization. And then I also want to look at how it's accommodated in a food safety plan. My English I cannot excuse for today because I'm meant to be able to do that quite well. Not because it's a good, so I kind of can polish it a little. I just want to explain to you as well that Mariana, it might only be Iraq for this presentation. Because normally when you're discussing something in an informal environment or with a glass of wine in your hand, you don't expect somebody to phone you up the next day and say you need to speak about it. So because we don't say no to Mariana, here I am. Right, so radio frequency has proven to be a kill step. When it comes down to pasteurization or disinfecting grain products, ready-to-eat foods. And in this presentation, I'm going to explain a little bit more to you. So we've also used radio frequency, and this is really where it started out, in a way where we would use it in drying processes, specifically for baking. And bakers would use this radio frequency to fully dry a cookie or fully dry a rusk. But also, it has also been proven to minimize water activity, and that comes down to minimizing microbial growth in your product and increasing the shelf life. Because it's a USA product, I'm going to refer a lot to this Food Safety Modernization Act, which is quite the buzzword in the US at the moment. And in this Food Safety Modernization Act, there were a major recall starting as far back as 2009. And this is where we found that this RF technology became a really great fit, because they were using it now to sanitize your grain products, your maize meal, your flour. And hopefully I'll allude to that a little bit further down the line as to where that fits in. APCs, by the way, are anaerobic plate counts, and it's been a proven kill step for insects, anaerobic plate counts, and also pathogens. The next thing I'm going to say is a bit controversial, but I need to say that in light of what was spoken about just before lunch. But there is some work that has been done surrounding the kill step for molds and yeasts, but they're also very thermally stable, so this is still a work in progress. But what you also need to know that is if we can kill these molds and yeasts, not necessarily going to kill the toxin that they're produced, but it does prolong your shelf life. So if we are successful with this, or at least if the manufacturing company is thought to be successful with this, it could be something that will be employed for grain storage, and that you won't get any mycotoxin production in the storage guy by the name of Mr. Joshua Manwaring, and he developed this rudimentary machine compared to what we have now. And as you can see, it's a 30 kilowatt system, and it was really designed for drying of grain. It was not designed for pasteurization. So this is where we're going back to. It's been around for, let's say, for argument's sake, going on 70 years. So how does it work? With any dielectric heating, this is microwave or radio frequency, we have a water molecule which is polarized, and if we subject this water molecule to a magnetic field or a radio frequency energy field, we can make the water molecule shift polarization. And if we do that fast, the water molecule creates heat. So I've put in a little, I just hope it works. Yes, it does. So if we go and supply an alternating current at a specific frequency to a product which contains even dry products like down to 2% moisture, we can accurately monitor the heating and control the heating throughout, and the big word here is uniformly throughout the product. So you have a product that's 2 meters deep, you can heat up that product from the center to the outside in a very uniform way, instantaneously, using radio frequency. People may ask, is it safe? Because everyone thinks about radiating. So, you know, work, yes, for sure. Radio frequency is safe because it's totally non-ionizing. And the USDA, once again, I'm back with the Americans, the USDA consider that ROP is a thermal process, and it adds nothing and takes nothing away from the product, hence it can carry the USDA organic label. And it does not view it as anything added to the product, so it can also carry the non-additive clean label in the US. I'm going to show you some more examples of machines, but effectively these machines look like this. And it's not necessarily a very small machine. Most of you guys know me as somebody who can supply a machine that just stands on the bench. And these machines will be used in process. And how they work then is you have a power transformer and an oscillator. You have two electromagnetic plates. And these electromagnetic plates are those two oscillating plates you saw in the animation. And when we supply the oscillating frequency to it, we can change the polarization of the water molecules in whatever product is running along this conveyor band. The air you see here is if you're using it for drying, then you'd want to put air into the system just to remove any of the moisture that is being taken off the product. So what frequencies are allowed when it comes down to dielectric heating? We speak about microwave, and some of you guys might have heard of that process. You know about microwaves in your kitchen. We talk about radio frequency waves. And when we speak about radio frequency waves, we might say, why do we use radio frequency waves above microwaves? Well, for one, and people may argue with me, is that it's safer, because as your waves increase, so does the safety factor. I'm the sort of guy that works in the infrared region, but this is just the same animal, just in a different wavelength range. So microwave versus radio frequency. Why 40 megahertz RF? Firstly, you've got a greater depth penetration using RF. With microwave, you don't have that greater depth penetration. You've only got about 42 centimeters. But here, you've got nearly 4 meters. You've got instant volumetric heating throughout the product. With microwave, you don't have instant volumetric heating. You have heating in patches. You have superior power control because of this depth penetration, which means that you can, by just adjusting the frequency, you can very accurately adjust the temperature of what you want to use your product for the kill step. I'll get into that. I'll make you understand that soon. And the operating costs are much lower. You don't have magnetrons that we have to look after. And because of the greater depth penetration and the fact that we can move the product at a high speed through the radio frequency applicator, we can have a lot more processing versatility. So disinfestation, which I think would probably be of interest to everybody here, and I'm speaking about disinfestation of grain specifically. In the 80s, this radio frequency company introduced a system to control tobacco beetles, and since that time they've been able to control weevils, they've been able to control the flower beetles, and it totally eradicates the RF frequencies which allow heating to as low as 58 degrees Celsius. But what I want to get through here is that it is adult pupae larvae and we've done some tests at 60 degrees. We've got 57.8 degrees, 64.4 degrees, and 75 degrees. And on different species of bees, we had absolute 100% mortality rates, adult, pupae, larvae, and eggs. This is typically a system which is loading grain out of a barge, and then it goes through a hopper, and you have the radio frequency applicator over here, and the grain then flows through the hopper and be totally disinfested before it gets loaded into the silo. I say clean silo because I can't disinfest the silo, I can only disinfest what goes into it. So in March 2006, which was very interesting, these guys did a project on nuts, and they took out the salmonella that they found in these nuts. These nuts are peanuts, pecan nuts, and almonds, ABC. And you can find that they did a 6-log kill step at 87.8 degrees Celsius on this on these nuts for the salmonella. It's just a good example. So they've been pasteurizing bag products, as well as grain products on a conveyor, as well as produced products. Pea starch, rendered animal products, fish meal, bean protein, nuts, spices, grains, wheat and maize meal, and then a lot of prepared food items which are being run through this process to ensure that kill step and ensure that pasteurization. So I thought also it would be good to just discuss the success factors, and I'm going to buzz through one or two of these because some of them are a little bit unimportant, but really boring. And it's just after lunch. So, the combination of temperature and time is what's required to kill the hoar frost. But how do we do this? This is the boring stuff. I'm not even going to go there. Right, so the higher the temperature, the shorter the time required to kill. Kill what you want to kill. But also, in certain species, or let me say certain targets, and I believe with the yeast and the molds that we're going to be looking at, it also has to be a hold time. So you're going to heat it up to a certain temperature, but you don't want to heat it up too much because otherwise you change the analytic properties of that product. And that means that you have to hold it at a specific temperature for a certain amount of time. And it's important that we know this. Anybody who will in the future be interested in this type of technology will need to know that there needs to be a transition time where the temperature can remain sufficient to ensure the kill step. Now there are two ways that these things are being done. The first one is, in this case, you see the RF applicator on bags of flour actually. And the flour that has been processed through this 2-ton-per-hour system is then stacked in pallets. And those pallets will then retain the temperature for the kill step to take place. But also, when you don't want to pack the system into pallets, we have a heat retention zone which gets built onto the system. So your RF applicator will complete the radio frequency application, and the heat retention zone will just ensure that your product is carried through and the whole time is retained. That makes sense, right? So the key benefits for dry ingredients, and this is where we are at. Firstly, for wheat, for maize, for soybeans, etc., that you would like to pasteurize, and also products that they produce. In other words, maize meal, flour, and soybean meal. There's no real temperature differential from surface to center. I've already spoken about that. There's no prolonged soak time, so you don't really have to worry about this extended logarithmic, this extended hold time on the product to keep the temperature at the peak. And then there's also a very short heating cycle. So because we've got the short heating cycle, we spoke about disinfesting grain at 58 degrees Celsius, you're not changing anything. This rapid temperature rise, and that's a question that you guys might want to ask me later, and I'll hopefully answer it now, is that it's this rapid temperature rise that kills the insects or the microbes and eliminates their ability to defend themselves by climatizing the temperature. So you can imagine the weevils in wheat, for instance, going from 20 degrees to 58 degrees in He has a 20-ton power machine, and that's one of the biggest I've seen. I believe they can go up to 40 tons per hour. After that, it becomes economically not viable, and this is the limitation in these products. We have a 5-ton ground machine, and the ones you see now are the 2-ton ground machines. The cost of these machines is, according to me, probably the limiting factor for these things to get involved with the processing, to be put into silos, to be put into molds, to be put into feed production plants. But that is changing, and that's why these things are becoming more commercially available. Alright, now the Food Safety Acts. This is the boring stuff, but I think it's really important to note when we get to the end of this presentation. In any food safety program, and we have to know that. What is the food safety? And food safety is going to be HACCP, first of all. Is there a kill step? But what is that kill step? How do we validate that kill step? How do I know that if I'm going to process your product through the system, that is actually going to be the kill step that you require? And I'd like to discuss that. And then, any food safety program, there's a monitoring function, there's a monitoring and control function, there's a verification function, there's a function that needs to be in place for how do you take the product off the line should it not adhere to the validation, and then how do you trend and look at trending, what is taking place to make sure that product is safe when it goes into the commercial area. So it has analysis, preemptive controls, and oversight and management. So HACCP, let's not get into that now. We all know what HACCP is. I think we've had that ad nauseum over the past couple of years. But what I also wanted to highlight here was that the management system in food safety is addressed through analysis and control of either biological, chemical, and physical hazards from raw material production, procurement, and handling to manufacturing, distribution, consumption of the finished product. And the HACCP system is then used to comply with this food safety analysis requirement. So for the HACCP, there has to be a kill step. And the kill step is where this machine comes in. So is it a kill step? In a word, yes, for sure it's a kill step. It's been used with success throughout the world as a kill step for insects, easy, pathogens, easy, as well as for reducing the water activity in your product, which then eliminates microbial growth. Not eliminates it, but reduces microbial growth. And then it's important that we speak about the kill step validation. So anybody who's supplying a fumigant, for instance, would know that you have to apply the fumigant to a certain dosage and for a certain period of time to ensure that you are killing what you want to kill. And the same applies in this case. We have to validate your product and not what you want to kill based on what you want to kill. So if you have, for instance, wheat flour, we have to make sure that we can spike that wheat flour with a specific target. And then we have to make sure that it kills it. And how do we kill it? We have to make sure that we have used the least amount of heating energy over the shortest period of time to make sure that it's being killed. And once that's been done, then that process can kick off and that can be stored on the instrument that can be used as a validation for this process. So what we normally do is then we would take your product and we put in either the fungus, the pathogen, the insect, and we'd ensure that that is then well established in the product, and we'd go through the process and we'd kill it. And then we're going to make sure that the log reduction or the kill step is successful, and that's with the acceptable levels to the customer. And then we can go and implement it into the machine. So it's really slow. And the pasteurization system is then a critical control point in your acid analysis. Am I making sense here? Do I need to re-explain it? That's cool. I'm gonna
ask us a few questions, Milko.
I'm gonna hang it. Look at my viewers' question. Okay. So, why put this line in here? In most cases, it's the product and not the kill target that we have to treat. And then these will all be selectable on the human machine interface. The human machine interface, which is on the machine, will already have applications for wheat, for maize. It's all been developed already. So when we look at this, I'm just telling you what has been done. If there's a new product which has to be sanitized, we can develop that process for it. And then obviously you have to have monitoring. So all the set points and the process variables that affect the product temperatures, speed of conveyor, etc., all included in the human machine interface, and those will all be followed through on the system. And we have to ask, is it food safety compliant? So why do we have to measure in certain places? Because that's what food safety requires of us, to make sure that we're not going to sanitize the product and it doesn't adhere to the specifications. And then what happens to that product afterwards? Is it sanitized or not? So we have on the system, just as an example, we can measure temperatures throughout the process at the end of the RF applicator, at the end of the heat retention zone. And this will all be stored on the instrument. I'll show you what it looks like. This will store on the instrument. So corrective action, the instrument, because it's conveyorized and because it can be put into your process, if it doesn't maintain those specific preventive measures, or let's rather say validation measures, the instrument will either move the product off the belt before it enters the bagging, or before it enters the silo, or before it enters the commercial process. And it will also highlight that to the food safety officer or the operator. And that verification and validation is all then stored on the system, so you can have the real trending for the complete batch that you actually wanted to analyze. So all the temperature, the belt speed, the hold time temperature, etc., which will not be determined by the validation process, will all then be part and parcel of the training for that specific batch. So how does this contribute to brand protection? And I thought I'd put this in here because we're speaking about risk. And risk is not only the risk of the product so much, but it's also the risk of the money that is. There's also reputation. Sorry, guys. So this was just specifically a case in 2016. 22,000 tons of retail flour to be recalled. And as you can see, this must have cost them a lot of money to do this. This was one of the biggest installations I've seen. I actually went to go and see these guys, and they're in Boston. And they have one of those 20-ton per hour machines specifically just for flour. So does this contribute to brand protection? So yes, of course it does. But while it's there just to pasteurize it, I would like to make the comment that it actually doesn't only contribute to your brand protection, but it also contributes to your business protection. And most of us here aren't necessarily processing the grain, but the processes of the grain, you can imagine that downstream, 22,000 tons ending up downstream, and everything you have to do to bring it back. So to conclude, yes, it's a proven technology for pasteurization and disinfestation, and also then for drying for the past 7 years. And because we can control the heating profiles in a very uniform way, we've got proven performance that RF pasteurization can become fully commercialized. It is a USDA organic thermal process. It can handle the FDA clean label. It is food safety compliant as a critical control point kill step. And it's able to be validated to comply with all your food safety acts and regulations. With this said, we believe that RF pasteurization is truly the way of the future. And on time. Thank you.
Thank you.
specifically to maintain it, okay, then